Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Lucas and Crawford on B-Ball Show. We do this show every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. We certainly appreciate all the great listeners we have. If you listen for the first time, I know you'll come back. If you listen all the time, as many of you do, I know you'll be there for us and tell everybody you can, because we're going to be around for a while doing this show. Once again, 10 o'clock every Wednesday night. I am Greg Crawford. I host this show each week. You can follow me on Twitter at WC Hoops, or you can read GregCrawfordBasketball.blogspot.com. And I publish that every day but Mondays. Every day but Mondays. So write it down. Go to it every day. You'll find something fresh, hopefully interesting. The real star of this show is Richard Lucas, the best State Farm insurance owner in the entire world, the best father, the best dad, the best landscaper, the best center at the University of Oregon at Blair Rasmussen, the best assistant coach that San Jose State University has ever had. Ooh, boy, how sad is that program gone down this year? Richard's not there. That's the reason. But let's bring Richard on right now and have a little fun, talk a little basketball tonight. Richard, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just fine. And I get the one thing that I don't feel sorry for San Jose State, the people who are there, is simply that the weather is perfect. So, you know, you take an L, you go in the locker room, you shake it off, and then you walk outside, and it's 75 degrees and perfect. So, you know, boo-hoo.
And plus, next to Albuquerque, it's got the best airport to navigate in the western half of the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a
fantastic,
great airport, easy to get out of, terrific.
Yes. So we're not crying any crocodile tears today for them.
Before we talk about Kansas University basketball, Richard, I want to ask you about San Jose State because –
yeah.
You know, it's kind of a school that exists, I call it. It kind of just exists. They've never really been that great in athletics. Does it take an administration and a change of the culture? What's going on down there? Because certainly there's enough players in the Bay Area and California to get a good club there.
Yeah. You know, to find out exactly what it would take to turn that around, I mean, that would take the entire time that we have. But I think in a nutshell, you're dealing with a situation where there's no tradition. There's nobody who is there that is putting any pressure on the athletic department to have success. Really, all the athletic department is trying to do is field teams that are enough teams to be able to compete in the conference and actually field teams. But whether they are good or not, they kind of doesn't really care. And it you can tell that they ultimately don't care because there is absolutely zero, and I mean zero, money that is put into the athletic department. The uniforms that the football team wears are just plain generic. I mean, they are literally the antithesis of Oregon Ducks football. I mean, they wear the same high school quality jerseys that you see down the street at a junior high school. The facilities are very poor. The men's basketball locker room is really, really poor quality. And so they really kind of almost they make it really difficult to even try to compete when you are recruiting against other schools, you know, in the area. And you're right, there's lots of great talent that's in the Bay Area, and you would think you'd be able to pull from them. The problem is that if you're an even halfway decent player – and you have choices, and you go on a recruiting visit to San Jose with a half-empty gym, poor facilities with no tradition, or you go, you know, even to a University of Pacific, that, you know, at least has a, some tradition and some sense of winning, it makes it difficult to compete. And so it's going to take a culture shift, like a major culture shift. It would take money. So some donors are going to have to put some money up, and the athletic department's going to have to say, okay, we're done being the doormats. We're done just absolutely not caring. We are going to care about athletics, and we're going to get after it. New uniforms and, you know, let's get the locker rooms to be – it doesn't have to be Oregon Ducks, you know, state-of-the-art fingerprint entrance, you know, locker rooms. But have some lockers, you know what I mean? Have something that's not, that you can't find at a local junior high school. And that is the level that they are operating at.
You know, let's flip the side here, Richard. And we were going to talk about Kansas last week, not able to have a program. But so we're going to talk about it this week. The complete opposite, where your son Landon plays Kansas. Unbelievable tradition. People line up for days for tickets. The atmosphere, as you've described, is electric every single time, no matter who they're playing. And that ain't going away for the next 100 years, I don't think, is it, Richard?
No, not as long as they are playing the game of basketball in Lawrence, Kansas. There will always be that passion that is there. And you know, you are right. I mean, we're talking about polar opposites between San Jose State and Kansas. I mean, there is a sense of accountability and tradition, and people care. And so because of that, the athletic department has made it a priority and prerogative that they are going to field the best teams that they possibly can year in and year out. And the fans will not settle for anything less. So, yeah, it is, you know, that is an unbelievable place to witness a game. I think, if not the best, at least one of the top two or three venues in the country to watch a college basketball game.
How many times have you been back to see Landon this year, Richard?
This year I've only been back the one time to watch him play. Of course, I watch every single game. Whether it's on television or if it's on online, that's one of the positives of being out of Kansas, is that about 90% of his games are on national television. So I can easily flip on the old television and pick up the game and watch it.
And I asked you this last year when we talked about Landon being there, and tell us, first of all, number one, how Landon's doing, and how much do, when you're at a program like that, that's a perennial top five, and they're never going out of that as long as Bill Self is there, in my opinion, how much communication do you have as parents with the coaching staff?
Yeah, good question. You know, when you're at that level, what I personally, I don't have very much communication with Self at all. When I go back, I usually will meet with the coaches. And when I meet with them, it's a quick, brief, sit in their office, how are things going, how is he doing, that type of communication. But for the most part, it's pretty hands-off. You know, the reason why we sent him there, or we wanted him to be there, was that I wanted him to be coached by a future Hall of Fame coach. I wanted him to play in an atmosphere where winning mattered. I wanted him to have strength and conditioning coaches that were second to none and facilities that were top notch. And so for me, I did all the vetting and did everything in the beginning to make sure that this was a great opportunity for him. And so once he's there, you know, I really kind of am hands off, and I just sit back and I'm just dad. And so, yeah, I get the calls when he doesn't play and he's not happy, or if he doesn't play well or something like that. But I just keep that dad hat on, and I don't ever try to interfere from a coaching standpoint.
Richard, I think our listeners, and you know, I don't want to get into too much private information, but I think our listeners would like to know, you know, and this could go for any athlete, with Landon being there and being a scholarship player, do you pay anything for him to go to school there?
Yeah, good question. No, I don't pay anything. No, full scholarship is as it sounds. It's an absolute full ride. So he pays. You know, I don't have to pay for anything. And you know, when I was in school, you know, there were definitely more limits on how much they could feed us and how much, you know, what did a scholarship constitute and that kind of stuff. You know, Landon now, I don't worry about any of that stuff because, you know, where he's living and the food, I mean, you know, when I was back there, you know, they deliver food to those guys like at 10 o'clock at night. They're delivering like late night meals to the players. So those guys are fed. They live in nice places, and so there is real no, you know, not really a need for us to help in any way. And the other thing too is over the Christmas break, but then also over the summer, mainly over the summer, a lot of the players will participate in different camps, basketball camps that Coach Self will put on, or camps around the state. And they'll ask the players to come and help with coaching and helping with the kids and stuff like that. And those kids get paid. They get paid to do those things. So, you know, he makes money, you know, over the summer and he has his own car. And so I feel like, I paid dearly up for the first 18 years getting him prepared for this. So now it's time for me to not be paying.
Very good, and I certainly appreciate you answering that. That's a little bit of a personal question, but I think it's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Richard, I mentioned at the top of the program that you own a State Farm insurance agency, and shame, shame on Greg Crawford. We always like to ask you some insurance questions, and people love that. They tell me all the time on the street they love the insurance questions. Besides, they love your basketball knowledge, Richard, so you're twofold here.
Right.
I've never asked you this question. What can someone do if they get in a fender bender? Because quite frankly, the police aren't going to come. They're just too busy with crime and stuff, and it's not their fault. As you know, you're a supporter most of the time of the police, and they do a good job. We know they do. Sometimes they mess up big time, but for the most part, they're really great. But they're not going to come on a fender bender. What should a person do?
Boy, you're nailing these questions. This is another really great question. The easiest and probably the best thing to do, and number one, is to make sure that you are get yourself and your vehicle and the other party to a safe place. If the fender bender happens on 26th, as you're coming into the tunnel or something like that, don't just leave the car, get out of the car, and try and deal with it. You know, where cars are zipping by at 60 miles an hour. You know, wave at the other driver, kind of point to a place where you guys can pull over, get over to the shoulder safely out of traffic and harm's way. That's number one, the safety. Cars can be fixed, obviously. People can't, or you know, we don't want people hurt. And then once that's done, or if you're already in a safe area, and it's just a minor fender bender, you exchange information. But I think a key thing that most people don't realize or think about is to always, if you can, try to get a witness, a third-party witness, somebody who is not in your vehicle, not in the other person's vehicle, just somebody who's an innocent bystander who has no skin in the game. That's your best bet. Simply because that person is going to assist and validate whose fault it ultimately was. Because what you don't want to have happen is you are not at fault, but because the evidence is too difficult to determine, you know, exactly who was liable for it, then it ends up being essentially a 50-50, which goes against you. So get a witness, get down the information of both drivers, exchange, and then put the claim in and take it from there.
Richard, one more follow-up question to that, and then tell everybody where you're located, how they can get a hold of you. But what if the person that you get in the accident with wants to argue about it? Then is the policy of State Farm, or I should say not the policy, but the recommendation, then is that the time to call 911? Or if it, you know, I mean, say he just wants to argue, it appears he's not going to turn violent. What do you recommend there?
Yeah, I am not an advocate of 911 unless you feel there's imminent danger to your personal being. 911 needs to be saved for, just only the worst of the worst, because we just don't want that to happen. Now, if somebody is just being belligerent and just being a jerk, for lack of a better term, just really all I would do is at that point in time, if they won't give you the information, right nowadays with cell phones, it used to be before cell phones, we used to advocate people keep, portable disposable cameras in the car. But with cell phones now and everybody having them with the cameras, pull out the camera and get a picture of the license plate. That's going to be your best bet. The license plate given to the police will allow the police to know whose car it is, the address. They'll find out the insurance carrier. They'll be able to gather virtually all the information that's needed if you can just take a picture of that license plate. So if there's a situation like that and you feel threatened, I would just get into my car, take a picture of the license plate, get in my car, and then we can deal with it later.
Very good. And how can people get a hold of you, Richard? Because they can obviously tell by listening to you, they're going to deal with a talented person who knows his stuff.
Well, if they want to get a hold of us, I'm located in North Portland at 3549 North Lombard, not too far from the University of Portland. Or you can give us a call at 503-200-5545. Love to talk to you about, of course, insurance, but I'm a sports guy, so I love talking hoops or talking football. You name it, we can discuss it.
Very good. And speaking of discussing it, I'm going to give you some big kudos here, Richard. I wrote about this today, and shame on me once again for not. I should have mentioned your name, and I will the next time I do it. But you mentioned way back in September, October, that you thought the Pac-12 was good for a little downturn this year. And I think they've taken a deep downturn. I mean, you look at the bottom half of the league, they're horrible. California, we thought was going to be good. They're bad. They're horrible. USC is not good. And then you, the middle of that pack, Colorado, Washington, UCLA, those are perennial contenders. And then even Arizona, Richard, I'm going to say is – no, I'm not going to say they're not good. They're great. But on the other hand, they're vulnerable. Oregon State beat them,
When you just looked at the rosters and you started watching those early games, I could see that this was not the league that we had seen over the last couple of years. Because, it's funny because, when you and I started doing the Talking Ducks a few years back, the league was really down. And then all of a sudden you saw this nice uptick where, you had four, five, six really, really good teams that could compete nationally. And it just feels like there's been that kind of step back with the league. The top few teams, I know Arizona is vulnerable, but still they're pretty dang good. They've got a pretty dang talented roster, and I feel like if they're hitting their shots, from the perimeter, which I think is probably their biggest Achilles heel is the 3-point line for them. If they are making shots, they're going to be really difficult because they just have such athletes and such big guys who are really strong and powerful inside. So. I still really like Arizona, and I think Utah is really, really good. But then it really kind of, after that, there's kind of a big kind of step down and then a jump off the cliff after that. So, you're not looking at the 5-6 deep league like it was just, like a year ago. So yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely regressed.
Richard, and comment on this. I wrote something today of when I wrote that, and shame on me once again, and I should have said that you called it right away, and I wasn't trying to steal your stuff. I never do that, as you know, but I wrote out bad things were. But I commented today that I think as bright as every Larry Scott gets all the plaudits and everything, like you talked about Kansas and being able to watch every one of the games, the way things are going nowadays, if I'm Larry Scott, and I'm shocked he hasn't done this, I grab the spotlight on one night a week for the Pac-12, like a Monday night. Say, I know that ESPN has the Monday night package, but there's other networks, and I have one game, and that's it. Only one game a night, and I grab the spotlight on a national network, not the Pac-12 network, and I play the game at 6 o'clock so the people in the East can watch. I think that needs to happen.
You know, I don't know about that, Craig. I mean, you know, I see your point because it's, you know, why did the, I think it was the WAC or whoever it was, started playing, you know, Thursday night football games way back, and why does the MAC play Tuesday night football games? It's to get that national attention when there's nothing else kind of going on. The only thing, there's two things I think that might cause this to be a little bit troublesome. One is the travel. Because of the natural partners of the Pac-12, you know, if you've got whatever that night is, then what happens with the other game? Is the team flying back home and then flying back out again? Are you missing more class because you're playing on a, let's say it's Tuesday night is your night, and then what happens is Saturday? I mean, you know, there, to me, there could be some travel issues that could be potentially a problem there. And the other thing too is that what night of the week it seems like is open. I mean, it, to me, it feels like between Big Monday and all the other ones. And I know that you're saying on a different network, but you know, if you're going to be overshadowed by a Kansas Iowa State game at 6 o'clock at the same time, no one's watching you anyway. Even though you're broadcast nationally, nobody's watching you because there's other things to watch. You've got to find a night, I guess, that there is nothing else going on. And I think, unfortunately, there's always something going on. So I don't know if the ultimate goal of what you're trying to accomplish is even possible.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, let me just take one more shot at this. You're talking about the travel. How about if five times a year you played a game at 6 o'clock on a night that, you know, I guess maybe you grab Monday night or Tuesday night. Those are the most vulnerable to me to attract a larger audience, even if you're competing against another area. And you play the rival. The rivals play each other. And that's the only Pac-12 game that night. Still not good enough?
I guess. I can tell you though, Greg, in all the time that you and I have been together, that's not one of my favorite ideas of yours.
Okay,
I think
that's fair enough. That's
I think there's lots of other
program.
Things that I would probably do better before this one.
We disagree on this, but that's fair enough. We need to probably disagree a little bit more, quite frankly, but I think that's what makes us both good at this.
Right,
we agree a lot. Okay, now here's one that you can disagree with me. Also, my question is about Robert Upshaw, the talented 7-footer at Washington that got dismissed. I think he's the best Pac-12 player in the last 5 to 10 years to get kicked off his team.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, my question is, do you know what happened?
Well, yes, I don't. No, I don't. I want to retract that. What I've only heard or read is that he failed another drug test, which he was popular at doing when he was at Fresno State.
Fresno State.
And that is what I've heard is the reason. And he was pretty much at the end of the chain of getting chances. So that is what I've heard. And you know, you got to think it's something that they had dictated to him. If you mess up this once, you're gone.
You're done, yeah. Well, you know, it's what I hope is that first and foremost for this kid, and I don't want to dismiss your question. I think you're right. This he's an exceptional talent, leading the country in block shots. And the thing about rim protectors and guys who block shots, it's there's the stats, and then there's also things that are not in the stats, the altered shots, the
yeah.
shots that go over. You know, get shot over a basket, over the backboard because somebody tried to shoot some rainbow over long arms. So, I mean, he means so much to Washington defensively, especially. A little raw offensively, but he's a freak of nature and athletic. And, you know, he's definitely can make money playing the game of basketball. I hope what happens is this kid gets help and realizes that his you know, whatever he is taking or whatever it is that he is has essentially been addicted to, he's got to fix if he's going to have success playing basketball, because the sky's the limit for him. I mean, he could be an NBA player and make millions of dollars, but he also could be living wherever he's from. I don't know where he's from originally. But he could be back there and making no money and wishing that you know, that he had made some different choices in his life. So, you know, it's terrible for the Washington program because, you know, those kids practice hard and they practice all year. And, you know, and now essentially their whole season is put in jeopardy because one player just can't seem to get his act together.
Richard Lucas, awesome job tonight. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday night, definitely. And thanks for being the best part of this program, Lucas and Crawford on B-Ball. And one quick comment, Richard, how do people get a hold of you at your State Farm Insurance Agency?
503-200-5545. Love to talk to you.
Have a great week, Richard, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday night. Good night.
Sounds good. Thanks. Bye.
You betcha. That's Richard Lucas. I'm Greg Crawford, and good night, everyone, and please make your free throws.